Welcome to Soundtracks. During the next hour, we're going to take you on a journey, not just along this road, but throughout history.
Set your speedometer at 50, or follow slower speeds posted along the road. At 3 points during the tape, we will give you a chance to catch up or lower your speed to keep pace with the tour.
Look in your printed guide for the 3 locations. You'll hear this music. And we'll tell you where you should be. If you are past that point, just adjust your tape accordingly.
Route 550 is one of the earliest roads in the area. It marks the route that many of Ohio's early settlers used to move west from Marietta, Ohio's first town. Many of those early settlers were veterans, and they bought the land from the Ohio Company with scrip they'd received in payment for their service in the Revolutionary War. The legacy of those veterans can be seen throughout Washington and Athens counties. Warren Township was named for General Joseph Warren, who fell at the Battle of Bunker Hill. The town of Sharpsburg was first named Federal. There were towns named Constitution, Plymouth, and Marietta for Marie Antoinette, the Queen of France, America's first ally.
Immigrants from other regions came too. As these settlers moved into this part of the Northwest Territory, they brought with them not only their families and a few possessions, but also their ideals, their dreams, and their heritage. Ohio University Professor of Geography, Hubert Wilhelm.
Ohio is a fascinating state to me as a cultural geographer because Ohio, as I said so many times before, is perhaps the only area, the only state in the Union which opened, after the purchase of the Northwest Territory, to the migration of people who, over a period of about 200 years, in the Northeast, East, and South, had developed very different ideas of how to deal with each other and the land. And these people all came into Ohio. This convergence of different backgrounds makes this area very, very fascinating. This area, southeastern Ohio, was the first area where 3 principal migration streams with their traditions came together: New Englanders, Easterners, and Southerners. They converged, they brought their traditions with them, they established them here.
New England, the East, and the South. Settlers from these 3 regions all came into Ohio, bringing with them different ideas, traditions, and building styles. Most of these settlers were farmers. To have a farm of your own meant wealth and standing in the community. For this goal, many were willing to leave their homes on the coast and challenge the wilderness.
A great-great-grandfather immigrated from Providence, Rhode Island in 1796 and came to Marietta. And he and his family stayed at Fort Harmer while he came out and purchased a half a section of land, 320 acres, here at Barlow. And they bought this half a section of land, 320 acres, for $2 an acre from the Ohio Land Company. We have the original deed, and was signed, one of the signers of the original deed was Rufus Putnam. And they built a log cabin, and they lived in the log cabin till they built the old brick home, which is still standing, in 1819.
Ed Lawton still lives on the farm that his great-great-grandfather cleared from the wilderness. He's not alone. There are many in the area who can trace their heritage back to the Ohio Company deeds.
When they settled here, this was all virgin timberland. And you wonder how they went in, cleared all this land off, and built their homes and their barns and raised their crops.
Once the land was cleared and their cabins built, they set about the business of farming. Historian Robert Fryman.
There's a stereotype here that we're up against, and that is the idea that you have these communities carved out of the wilderness. But remember, by 1840, 1839, Ohio had been a state for 36 to 37 years. We had well-developed urban centers, early urban centers developing, such as in Marietta. We also had Cincinnati at that time, which was growing. So there we're not a wilderness community. The frontier has long passed us by 1839, 1840.
Ahead, on your right, there is a white pillared farmhouse on a high hill. That farmhouse is a house style commonly referred to as an eye house. The pillars were added later to give a plantation feel.
By that time, they were making some money. They were reading about what was in, what was popular. They watched their neighbors. They built the house that was in, that meant status. And that house meant status.
The house of choice was the eye house. You'll see many more along this road.
When you have five windows across the top and four windows at the bottom, central doorway, that's what's called a full classical eye house. This has a central hallway, two rooms toward the either side, and then, of course, a hallway or the stairway in the middle and the hallway on top. So this reflects this sort of Georgian architectural and federal architectural influence, which required symmetry of structures. And the chimneys have moved out toward the sides. It was a standard farmhouse. It replaced very often, of course, the log cabin.
The eye house got its name because it was so common in the three eye states, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. But it's also common here. Prosperous farms sprang up throughout Washington and Athens counties. But as the farms were cultivated and developed, farmers needed to find a way to get their goods to market.
Get up, get up. Get up. Get up.
My great-grandfather had to take their feed to a mill, and it was a mill at Waterford, Ohio, on the river. And there was no trails, there was no roads. They had to cut the trail. And from the time they left here till they got back home again was almost 2 weeks. He said they had to cut the trail, and they got out there, they had to wait their turn at the mill to get their feed ground. And while they waited, they used their horses or their oxen to go out and log or do work for people while they was waiting to get their feed ground. It's about 10 miles.
The state, as early as the 1800s, started building roads. As soon as you had 12 local people sign up for a road, the state would come in with what they called the 3% fund, and this was money levied against the sale of state land, okay? So the state always had some money that was used then for road building. Of course, the local people would help, you know, building these roads, but the state started very, very early, the early 1800s, right after the state was founded, 1803, started into the business of road building. And then the state gave it up and handed it over to turnpike companies. And then they would assess their own tax at X number of miles. They would have a pike across. That's why they called the turnpike companies. And then these were private companies, and they would build roads.
One of the earliest roads was Route 550, or as it was called then, the State Road.
No, there was no road, just a path.
Ermine Green is 96. Even when he was young, the roads were narrow and unpaved.
Spring of the year when it gets muddy, and time the mud was knee-deep for a horse, and it was awful.
Roads were a necessity and a bother. You could depend on them being undependable. But in the 1850s, a new innovation promised to solve all the farmers' problems of getting their produce to market. The coming of the railroad meant the beginning of a new era of prosperity for Southeast Ohio. Robin Lacey, professor emeritus of theater at Ohio University, has a fascination with the Marietta and Cincinnati. He has walked much of the route in this area.
Marietta and Cincinnati was the early railroad of which Mr. William Cutler was the guiding influence with other people involved. And was dreamed of as the main route to the east from the Ohio resources. It didn't turn out that way, but that was the dream.
Thank you. It took over 6 years to complete the 196 miles of the Marietta and Cincinnati Railroad. The track ran just south of where Route 550 is now, from Marietta to Tunnel. Then it went on to Fleming, where it veered farther south to Vincent, Quailey, Cutler, and then on into Athens.
The first track was laid right on the raw earth and was very bumpy. That was a long process, though. There were years and years that the Marietta and Cincinnati would promise in the newspapers that such and such a portion of the track would be ballasted and smooth and so on.
But the promise of a railroad spurred the growth of the area. Towns like Vincent, Fleming, and Tunnel that were along the proposed route were planned and charted in anticipation of the railroad's coming.
Oh, I think many of the little towns really would not exist today if it weren't for the fact that they were on the railroad and provided a focus point at which the surrounding farmers and industrial people could make contact with the railroad.
The coming of the railroad helped the small communities to grow and prosper. Farmers now had a way to get their produce to market. The farms grew larger and farmers began to move out of their first homes.
The I House becomes the house of choice. It represents status to the farmer. And as I said, it was usually the house built after he left the log cabin. And that was the next house that would be built because it represented wealth, permanence, independence, status, the whole thing. Very, very interesting. So it becomes a very popular house by that time, already the early 1800s.
And they lived in the log cabin till they built the old brick home in 1819. It made all the bricks by hand.
The Lawtons' homestead in Barlow is another example of an early I House. The family has lived there for six generations.
That's an old house. That house was built by, it would be my great-grandfather's brother, Jesse Lawton. Paul Beach owns that place now, which would, he would be a fifth cousin of mine, fourth or fifth cousin.
Farther back, near the pine trees, is the original Lawton homestead.
When they lived in a log cabin, My great-great-grandfather was at the Fort Harmer, and his wife, which was my great-great-grandmother, was staying here in the cabin by herself. And it was a rainy, cold night, and there was, she heard a noise, looked up, and there was an Indian standing in the doorway. He caused no harm. He just wanted to get in out of the weather.
Barlow was originally called White Oak Settlement, then Wooster. And finally, around 1840, it became Barlow. It was named for Joel Barlow, a Revolutionary War soldier, poet, and land agent who brought so many settlers to Ohio. Over the years, the population has pretty much remained the same.
Good afternoon, Seaman.
Something else has remained unchanged, too. The gray building on your right, the Seaman General Store.
My name is James Yost. Brother-in-law and I owned the Barlow General Store, Seaman Yost Store. We started in with nothing and kept each year, instead of taking money out, we kept putting all the proceeds back in, building it up to the point after 38 years we had a real good, we thought, general store. Had a full line, hardware, groceries, about anything you want. If we didn't have it, we'd get it for you at a reduced price. Now, we built a lot of our business on it. You got 10% above cost, and we made money from it. But today, people say you can't operate on 10%. We did.
The store had other conveniences as well.
You want a sandwich, we'd make you a bologna sandwich, or cut you off a chunk of cheese. And, of course, ice cream, that was one of our big features. Nickel ice cream cones. And we sold lots of it.
This is checkpoint number one. You should be passing the Barlow Rest Area. Once you are there, start the next track on the CD.